The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
And when children face loss, the right words and actions can make all the difference. Dr. Clare Crowe, member of the Psychological Society of Ireland, is with me now. And Clare, this is a really difficult one to grapple with. Like, we have to change our response, I would imagine, depending on the age of the child. And for some, it might be their first realisation and understanding that things end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think parents get caught in, what are the words I should say? What are those perfect words? And actually, that doesn't matter. All that matters is that you have care and compassion and that you say it in a loving way. So whatever way you say that someone has died, that is okay, because we are giving that model of, I'm here with you, I'm sharing that information with you, and I care about your reaction. And of course, the thing is, kids will react so differently to adults. So adults, we tend to sit in grief. So we have a sustained period of it. But children do what we call puddles of grief. So they jump into a puddle and they're in grief, but then they immediately jump back out of it. So you might tell them, you know, granddad has died, and they might reply saying, okay, can I go back and play now? And you're thinking, gosh, do they even react? But actually, that's what children do. They don't process immediately. They'll let you know when they're ready to jump back into that puddle.
Okay, because that can be quite unnerving as an adult to see that.
Yeah, it is just a completely different way of grieving than we do. And actually, it's a gorgeous way. They go up and down in grief, never sustained, which means you get this gorgeous windows of, oh, you're just yourself now, even though I can see you're still sad. But you mentioned that there, Clare, there are different stages of grief for, depending on their age. So when we think, you know, parents will often say to me, oh, they're only an infant, they don't experience this. But actually, infants do experience grief, because like our, you know, our little toddlers, our babies, they're body talkers and body readers. So what they will read is, you're more tense. So it's really good if you can put that into words. So from a neuroscience point of view, if we put words in our experiences for children, that takes away the trauma, helps them make sense of the world again. Mm-hmm. So I had a mom who said to me, gosh, my one-year-old is a devious. She keeps on saying to me, granddad's dead. And then that immediately makes me cry. And I was saying to her, gosh, your kid is so clever, because, you know, what the one-year-old was learning is, I say granddad dead, mom cries, so dead means sad. So she's making sense of the world. So it's a gorgeous, normal way to do it. And like I say, a neuroscientifically sound way to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's what that baby needed, and that's what they were doing.
So that's just her trying to make sense of what has happened.
Of the tension, of the you know, she can experience the change in mood and atmosphere in the household. Uh-huh. So, and they'll say it at different times and they can catch you off guard.
Because if what she's seeing is, mom is sad when I say this. Is she trying to provoke that reaction because it's puzzling to her to see mom being sad?
Yeah. And what she needs is mom to say, it's not you that's made me sad. I'm sad because granddad died. So that's the gorgeous storing we do for our children. And that's what helps them realize, oh, it's not me. Because kids are so egocentric, they'll think it's all about me. So what we're doing with our language or words is we're helping them realize this is something outside of you, but also, and I feel it, and that's okay.
Right.
Mommy's sad.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
And I'm sure you get asked a lot, should I bring my child to the funeral? Should I bring my child to the wake? Is there a right answer to that question?
Yes, there is and there isn't, in terms of, I never have a definite. I have three pointers that I give to parents. The first is your age of your child. So if your child is, we kind of say 7 is the age of reasoning. So above 7, you know, they can really logically make sense of what's happening. The second part, I think, is their personality style. So if they're quite sensitive or very emotional and you feel, gosh, I'm not sure if they are going to cope with this, it's okay to have a reassessment of that situation. And the third is their closeness to the person that died. So it can be really helpful if the first funeral they're going to is someone who's a little bit more distant, actually.
Okay.
Because they learn funeral etiquette and the world of an open casket in a kind of like safer way. I had a 7-year-old who, again, didn't want to go to his grandmother's funeral. And the mom kind of raised it with me. And actually, for that 7-year-old, it wasn't that he didn't want to go. It's that he didn't want his granny to be dead. So his thought process was, if I don't go, it's not happening. Because, of course, at that age, seeing is believing. So
that's probably a reason to sort of push that a little bit.
I know. And that's exactly what these parents wanted. And, of course, in some circumstances, we have to bring the child to the funeral because it's someone in the immediate family. There's no one else, you know, to mind our child.
For practical reasons.
Yeah. So in those situations, what we did with this 7-year-old is we gave him a purpose. We gave him an important job to do at the funeral. So his grandmother always had like a packet of sweets in her pocket. So his job at the funeral was to go in, he bought the sweets and put them in her pocket so that she looked like herself in the coffin. And that was such an important job, and that kind of really helped him to feel like, actually, I'm doing something, and now granny is granny, mm-hmm. and she has those going with her. So it can be a little bit about bringing ritual into it for a child. You know, like I would say, you know, maybe a painting, putting in like a drawing into the casket with the person who's died that goes with them. Or if it happens after the funeral, to kind of look at, you know, can we release a balloon or a lantern into the sky? Or maybe we can plant a tree. Kids, when they're going into that puddle of grief, when they're ready to splash in, you want to meet them where they're at. So you want to say, okay, now you want to talk about granny. Now you want to do something. How about, and have kind of a list of things. Would we light a candle? What would you like to do today to mark it?
So you're making them part of the process. Like if you go back to what you were saying about giving the little boy a job or putting the picture in, you are a part of this. You're included in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Grief becomes quite active then. It's like participating. And it also means we're okay to talk about it. We're okay to talk about the person who died. We have words for this. We have actions to go with it. Kids always learn through play. So we do want to bring in that kind of doing element to it. Mm-hmm. Now, it is different when you get to the teenage years because, of course, they have a real adult understanding of death, but they don't have the emotionality of an adult. So it can be derailing. And often what we see with our teenagers is that kind of sense of anxiety or frustration, injustice that kind of goes with it.
Anger,
absolutely. I worked with a teen and her dad had died. And I remember for her, it was guilt. So she had been doing that very developmentally appropriate thing of acting out, you know, like fighting back a little bit and also hanging out with her friends, like really normal things. But she had so much guilt around, gosh, I was so mean to my dad. Now he's dead. But actually, we did, like, again, for this teen, the message was, your dad knew you loved him and he loved you. So it's okay to have spent time away from the house. It's okay to have, you know, not been your best self. That's part of normal, you know, growing up. Mm-hmm. And kind of forgiveness, giving yourself permission to forgive. The other thing I would say for teenagers is it can be very triggering to hear words. You know, often we'll say, they would have been so proud of you or something like that. And actually that can be really triggering for a teenager when something comes up and you're putting words on the person that died. Because it'll often come back with, you don't know exactly what they would say.
So avoid that.
Avoid it. So what I generally say to parents is stick with the mantra, the really clear mantra, which is, they loved you and you loved them. And that's the secure base. You don't need to put other kind of maybe nuances or words onto the other occasions that get missed. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to That's a Pepper Thing. First up, we've got Harrison wrapping his Dr. Pepper in a tiny quilt so it feels at home. Oh, how tender. That's a Pepper Thing. And over to Becca, who's whispering affirmations to her can.
You're sweet. You're unique. You're the best thing I ever poured over ice.
She swears it makes it taste better. It's not a science thing, but it's a Pepper Thing. Why do they all do it? All for that sweet, delicious, truly one-of-a-kind taste of Dr. Pepper. It's a Pepper Thing.
Hmm. What about showing your grief then as a parent and going back to the younger children as well? Because that can be, while it's really honest, it probably is upsetting for a young child to see mommy or daddy crying because they've lost their parent. What do you do?
Absolutely show your grief. You know, I think the temptation as parents is to protect our children. I'd say if you spoke to a vet, they will tell you so many wild stories about how when a pet dies, the things families will do to save their children from death. I've heard a few of them before. And I just think, gosh, like, let our children experience death and let them experience our sadness with death, because that's what's honest. Like I say, kids are body readers. They will know that we're sad, but they're also focused on themselves. So they will wonder if that sadness is coming from something that they did, something they've done wrong. So it's much better to be able to say, I am so sad today. I loved my mom. I loved my husband, whatever it is, and I miss them. I'm having a sad day today. And when I'm sad, I cry, and that's okay. And if you want, you can give me a hug today, or, you know, allow them to be part of it. Let them have permission. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'm going to go for a walk now because sometimes I, you know, walk by the sea and I feel a little bit calmer in my body. What a model for them that this is the right way to do it.
So that is reassuring for the child.
Absolutely. And the research shows us the best predictor of how a child copes with death is how a parent copes with death. So actually, as a parent, the kindest thing is to look after yourself, because that will help your child. So it's a bit like the, you know, being on the airplane and putting on your mask first. Do that. Mind yourself, because that is the best way you mind your child. So it's not selfish. It's not entitled. It's a really, really good way of modeling to your child that actually someone I loved that mattered to me is not here. Mm-hmm. So I am minding myself, whether that's, I don't know, I go to yoga class or whatever it is that you do to kind of give yourself some soothing.
So look after yourself, but also expose them to it. Expose them to the whole process of it, the funeral, and have them be part of that and to understand it.
Yeah.
So when the dog dies, don't hide that from them either.
Please. You know? Oh my gosh. Like, we've had dogs that were traded in, you know, the puppy gets knocked down. And I remember a friend of mine is a vet, and she said, you wouldn't believe the fortune this family spent in getting the exact same style puppy and replacing it in. And of course, the kids are so astute. They're like, oh, he didn't bark that way.
Or if you did that with a teddy, they'd know.
Exactly. And she, you know, and of course, it's coming from a really good place of, oh God, they're so attached and we don't want them to be upset. But actually, our pets are a great way to start for our kids to learn about life and death in a way that's contained. I always encourage families, if they can have a goldfish, have a goldfish, because, you know, who can keep those alive? You know, absolutely.
We're trying, Claire. We're trying in our house right now.
Okay. Well, you're doing better than me. We've lost three.
But even that then is a good way to model or to show your children what happens.
Yeah, it normalizes death. And like, Irish people are so good on death. Like, you know, we celebrate life when we do death. So let them be part of it. Let them come to the wake. Let them hear the stories as much as possible, because we do it so well as a culture. We've no need to pull back from that. And then sometimes one question I do get asked by parents is, you know, about resources, stories, books, you know, because it is hard to find the words sometimes. And that's why I'm saying it's not perfect words. And you'll have lots of conversations, like every part of parenting, there'll be lots of conversations over time. So don't put too much weight in this one conversation. And if you do want other kind of resources that are nice, people will probably know of The Invisible String. That's a gorgeous book because it talks about connection rather than necessarily the death, like the ongoing connection, the love I still have for you. It, you know, what we never use euphemisms with a child. We don't say they've gone away or they're in a better place, because what happens then is we have children going, they left me for this better place. Mm-hmm. Or
Can I go to the better place? You know, they just don't understand that it's not, there's no return.
Yeah. I had a family who they'd said the grand had gone to a better place, and then dad had to go, he worked abroad a lot, and they suddenly had pandemonium because every time dad left to a different place, the child was like, oh my gosh, he's dead. And they would show him on Zoom, but until he came back in. So it's that clear language. He's gone. He has died. He's not with us. We won't see him again. Mm-hmm. But we will hold on to our love for him. You can always give that love.
So The Invisible String is the book that you're recommending.
And there's another gorgeous book written by an Irish mother, which is called Holly's Journey. She's from Limerick and a teacher, and she wrote it for a sibling when their little brother or sister has died. And I always think that's a gorgeous resource for children when we're looking at those kind of more complicated grief books.
Okay, so that's Holly's Journey The Invisible String. Claire, thank you so much. That is Claire Crowe, a member of the Psychological Society of Ireland.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.